Good morning. Can everyone hear me? In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. We're going to go ahead and start with a conference prayer. I know how to get a Catholic group quiet, right? Okay, we're going to go ahead and start with a conference prayer, and then I look forward to introducing our speaker for this morning. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to our son, to your son's life and to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Good morning. Thank you all for being here this morning. And welcome to session 56, the Modern Diocese, New Trends and Innovative Ideas for Diocesan Leaders. And I can't think of a better person to lead this session for us than our speaker, Nick Pringer, who is the CEO of Pringer Solutions Group. He has 18 years of experience in this segment. Nick is brilliant if you haven't met him. He really is. And he leads a team, a really brilliant team as well. So a team of experts who provide digital fundraising solutions to Catholic parishes, schools, and dioceses. He and his team help their clients modernize their fundraising programs in areas related to online giving, email marketing, donor software, data analytics, social media, website design, landing page optimization. There's more. I could keep going on. But so you'll have to look up in the app to see the rest of his bio. I will say Nick is also on his parish stewardship committee. He and his wife Holly and their three kids are very involved in their parish. And Nick, we are so thankful to have you as a sponsor for ICSE and always being here to share your knowledge with us. So thank you, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Welcome. Some people are asking, so we're going to cover, many of you are on our webinar about the Diocesan survey that we did, so we're going to cover a little bit of this, but this is not a rehash of all of it, so if you're in the right spot. I put this up because if you did not participate in the webinar when we released the results, let me explain it. PSG did a giant survey this past year, and many of you in this room did the hard work of helping us fill out that survey. I know it was a pain in the butt. Thank you for doing that. We released the results a couple weeks ago. You can go there. You can scan that code to see a recording of it. You can download the slides. And if your diocese is one of the 120 that participated, you can also download every single question and answer that we got. So the short version of the survey was we asked everybody, what do you use for a diocesan donor database? Do you mandate software at your parish level? And if so, what software do you mandate? What do you use for accounting and payroll? Are you still printing a newspaper? So all the questions we get asked all the time, we actually have it in a formal spot for you. If the scan doesn't work for you for some reason, you can swing by the booth and I'll give you the actual URL. Okay? So with that, we will jump in. I'm going to talk into the mic as I was asked. PSG, thank you for the kind introduction. I think we work with most of you. We do a whole lot of stuff. We run fundraising appeals. We help with a lot of Razor's Edge stuff. We do some automation. We work with 120 out of the 180 dioceses. We're very proud of it. This is all we do. Things we're going to cover today. Today's sort of a greatest hits of all the things that we want dioceses to know, all the cool things that we see out there. So we're going to share our best advice and then take a ton of questions. So we're going to talk about syncing parish rosters. We're going to talk about diocesan database options, talk about gift processing, fundraising automation, diocesan comms, and then we're going to talk about Corey Howitt for a little while. So save your questions or we're not going to have enough time to talk about Corey at the end. And he was kind enough to sit in the front here. We've got a lot to cover, so we're going to get in. All right. Syncing parish rosters. So if you participated in the survey, you remember we asked, does your diocese maintain a single source of truth? Okay. This is something that is super boring, but we care very deeply about. All the development directors care very deeply about how do we know who is in the pews? How do we reach people? I need an address and an email if I'm going to communicate with them. 31% of dioceses said yes, they maintain a single source of truth. And I want to illustrate why this is important. Okay, so this is a typical donor couple at your diocese. Let's walk through all the milestone things that happen. Not all of them. Let's walk through the big ones. Okay, so data points that you would be interested in, right? So maybe they move to Omaha, they get married, they join St. Leo's Parish, then they donate to the annual appeal. Then they move across town to a different parish, okay? Child one, child two, they attend a diocesan event at some point, maybe a March for Life, they have child number three. They enroll their kids in a school, that's another database. Maybe the husband or the wife starts a new business. They sign up for a diocesan newsletter. They donate to a diocesan capital campaign. Keeps going. They attend an archbishop's dinner. They send their kids to Catholic high school, which is another database. They join the bishop's circle. Maybe they serve on the parish finance committee. Maybe they serve on the diocesan finance committee. They fill out one of your forms on an appeal card. Says, yes, I'd like to receive more information about planned giving. Maybe they sell the business. They buy a second home, and they move to that second home. And how do you record that inside of your system, right? They move down to Our Lady of Joy in Arizona. They donate to the parish capital campaign, right? Then maybe the husband passes away, the wife, the widow moves in with her daughter. All of those are data points that happen in other than selling the business, almost every single household, right? Those are things that happen in the life of your parishioners. All of those data points, here's where they're living, right? So that simple example, you got St. Leo's has them from when they first started, right? Then you got Christ the King, which is using eCatholic, Christ the King School, which is using a spreadsheet, right? Diocese has Razor's Edge, but Diocese also has Flocknote, right? When they signed up for that newsletter, it went into Flocknote, didn't make it into Razor's Edge. They signed up for that planned giving, and that went into Free Will. Creighton Prep, separate database. They sent the boys to high school there. That's in Razor's Edge. Diocese are in BidPal, right? Because that's what they do when they attend the Archbishop's Dinner for Education. It's all run through BidPal, which probably doesn't make it back to the main one. And, of course, the second home they bought, they're down in that parish. This is the lived experience of a whole lot of the folks in this room, right? I see heads nodding as we walk through it. And it's a huge pain in the butt. It's something that we have to solve. So going back to the diocese, it said, how, you know, do you maintain a single source of truth? Of the 31% that said yes, 3/4 of them say our development office owns that, which is how it should be, okay? And I shared this so that you know, I shared the same advice with your IT people when we presented at DISC, because there are some IT people that are like, oh, development shouldn't own that. It should be, you know, the information security people. That's rubbish. Your IT people do not care if your database is up to date, right? You guys care deeply if your database is up to date, right? If you have email addresses, if you have regular addresses, if you mark somebody as deceased so that they don't get the mailings anymore, you care more than anyone else. You should own that database for your diocese, okay? So if you're one of those 18%, this is your call to action, right? Go back to your diocese. Get me on a call. I hop on a lot of calls for free, and I will walk you through it. But you should own this. It's the only way that's going to work, right? Comms owns it in 6% of dioceses. In terms of how they're doing it, the majority have a single source of truth because all their data is in one single platform, right? So I'm thinking of like, is Scott Whitaker in the room? Scott, there you go. So Scott's got everybody inside a ministry platform, right? The diocese and the parishes. That's how you maintain a single source of truth. 20%, 1 in 5. 19, the diocese sends something out to the parishes and asks for updates, right? So maybe every 6 months, maybe every year, they send out a roster and say, hey, please send us updates and send it back. How often do you think that actually happens? Right? Zero. So you guys are laughing about that. How about this? 43% who say they maintain a source of truth say, oh, well, the parishes just send us their updates, right? How often do you think that happens, right? So now put that 31% in perspective. Of the 31, 1 in 3 say we maintain a single source of truth, and almost half of them maintain it by just assuming the parishes are somehow sending them the information and it's getting up to date. Okay? This is a major gap in our ability to fundraise and our ability to evangelize. Anything that we do relies on us having this information. Okay? Let's look at the 69% that don't have a single source of truth to say, are you working towards it? Is it something that you're interested in getting to? 18% said yes. 36% were very honest, right? Yes, but we have no idea how to get there, and I get it. So we're going to talk about how you can get there and best practices. Unsure, no plans, 18%, okay? So what does it look like in most dioceses right now? It looks like this. Parishes, all on different platforms, right? In the survey, we found that I think it was 32, 33% of dioceses mandate a CRM at the parish level. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Diocese says you have to use Parishsoft. You have to use PDS or ministry platform or something else. So 2/3 of dioceses don't mandate it. Then at the diocesan level, you have your database, Your comms office has their database. Increasingly, we're hearing about dioceses that are thinking about moving to HubSpot to enter something new into this mix, in addition to Razor's Edge and Flocknote and everything else is already out there. You have your newspaper, which probably runs on a separate system. For years and years, you guys have heard me talk about this. All of the software companies promised they were going to solve this, right? We are going to come out with the one software, and you're all laughing, and you should, right? It did not work for very real reasons, right? What you need at a diocese, for the most part, there's exceptions, is going to be more advanced than what your parishes want to use, right? It is very tough to thread that needle and have a software program that solves both use cases perfectly. Helps you run a parish, helps you run a sophisticated annual appeal. So basically, this doesn't exist anymore. People have given up on it. So the status quo in diocese now is this. So we'll start with the nightmare scenario, and then we'll talk to like what the best dioceses are doing, many of whom are in this room. So the nightmare scenario is this. You've got parishes on the left, and they're just sending you those rosters. Like that example, the 43% that said, oh, yeah, we're in great shape. The parishes send us the information whenever something changes at the parish level. Okay, it does not happen. It does not happen. Maybe two or three parishes are sending you updates like that. And I talk to IT people and they're like, oh, Nick, we've solved this. I built a Google form. It's out there. Like, we totally solved it. It asks for names. It asks for emails. Like, I don't know why you keep harping on this. I created a form and I told the parishes about it. Like, problem is solved. What are we doing? Okay. So that's a nightmare scenario. Some of you are in that spot. It can get better. Current best practice looks like this. You've got the parishes, you've got the diocese. I use Razor's Edge because 2/3 of dioceses are on Razor's Edge. It's the default. It's not the only one. It's the one most people use. So here's what it looks like. First thing is a major database cleanup at the diocese. I was just talking with Matt from Cincinnati about this. The diocese says, we're going to get serious about this. Here's how you do it and where you start. The diocese, you have to clean up your own database first. Get it organized, dedupe it, make sure that you've got your constituents organized and you've got spouses connected to the head of household and all of that stuff. And then you send the rosters to the parishes and you say, here's who we have in our system for St. Mary's. Take a look, review it, edit it, and send us back the updates. And you either have to send your constituent codes from your system to the parish and have them add it to their system, or you get the constituent codes from the parish system and you add them to yours. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Yeah. It's a big undertaking. It's expensive. It's hard work. It's a lot of looking at two Excel lists next to each other and finding out, is Bob from the parish the same as Robert in my Dawson database, and making those judgment calls. But if you do it, I am telling you, it is worth it. Okay. So then what happens is, once you do this, you do the big cleanup, you get every parish to review the roster, and of course what happens? Half the parishes do it, the other half just give you an export, right? They don't look at what you sent, they say, you figure it out, this is your problem, right? And you just have to own it, and because you care more about it and you want to have a good database. But once you do this, then you can take that information from them. Everything is clean for the first time in the history of your diocese. You've got people matched up from the parish system to your diocesan system. And then you can get that annual spreadsheet and make edits, because when they send you the parish spreadsheet, it actually has the ID numbers that let you identify who is who. But more importantly now, you can do it through APIs or webhooks, because most parish platforms now are no longer silos. In the old days, they built, so if you're going to use like Servant Keeper or something, you install it on a machine and it just sits there. Now, if it's Gabriel, if it's PushPay, if it's Ministry Platform, they have APIs, or at the worst case scenario, they have what's called a webhook, and you can go and pull that information. You don't have to wait for them to send something to you. You can pull that information on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. Our clients, we recommend every Friday. Every Friday, you make a pull that just says, give me anything that's changed at the parish level, and then you bring that into your system. Make sense? All right. So that's current best practice. There are tools that can help with this. We have a thing called Automate Genius, many of you use, where we can set up an automation so that if you're pulling that information once a week, we can automate how that goes into your diocesan database. If you're using Razor's Edge, we can make sure you don't even have to touch it in most cases. If somebody adds an email, it just goes in. So we get rid of a lot of manual labor. Okay? This is worth spending time on. Okay? I know it's not glamorous. I know it's more exciting to ask people for money and talk about raising money in your annual appeal. That is downstream from you having a good database. Okay? So go make a fuss, make noise at your diocese. This is an important thing to do. If your bishop doesn't want to mandate software, I get it, right? It takes political capital to tell parishes you are all going to go onto the system. But if your bishops do, just know that is where the winds are blowing that way. They will hear from their fellow bishops that this is where dioceses are moving. We're going to talk about how dioceses are starting to centralize things again. Okay. Database options for dioceses. We get asked this all the time. Here's what your landscape looks like. 2/3 use Razor's Edge. A couple use Salesforce. St. Petersburg, Megan uses Salesforce. Cincinnati. Matthew uses Salesforce, so if you're curious, talk to them. Virtuous, we have a couple. So Grand Island, Nebraska uses it and likes it. Lisa in Kansas City, Lafayette in Indiana, or the other one, the next door neighbor. Lafayette, Louisiana uses Virtuous, the original Lafayette. The other Lafayette's in the back. He took umbrage at that. Okay. But this is, I mean, honestly, this is really it. And we get asked, I mean, just this week we got asked, okay, Nick, what is the great, Razor's Edge is such a pain. It's so expensive and they're gouging us every year. All of that is true. And we at PSG have been looking for a long time. What is the next thing, right? Everybody wants off of Razor's Edge for a bunch of different reasons. We believe we've endorsed Virtuous to some extent. We're like, okay, we think they're closest, but I have to be honest with you too. We have a couple clients that have moved over to them and it has not gone well. It's gone pretty bad in a couple, cases. So this is me telling you, I'm bursting your bubble. There is no perfect solution out there at the diocese. Most dioceses right now are still on Razor's Edge and they're just keeping their powder dry and they're biting their tongue and they're paying it. You know, they're not doing 3-year renewals. They're doing 1-year renewals. That's where we are. There is no 1-to-1 replacement yet. Salesforce, again, I don't want to go real deep into this, but Salesforce is powerful, has all the same problems of Razor's Edge, only you don't have the user group of every other diocese being on the same platform, right? You're a little bit more of an island. We have no skin in this game. We just kind of report what we see. The reason most dioceses use these is because it lets you do the advanced things you're going to want to do in your annual appeal office, right? It's going to be built with APIs. It's going to let you do things like build scan lines, right, and incorporate lockboxes and have package codes and appeal codes and reconcile with finance and do all the modern, sophisticated things you need to do to run a diocese. Not to say that's the only thing you have to use, but that's what people are using. There is another option, and I already brought up Scott Whitaker as an example. There are parish platforms that are sometimes used at the diocese level. So this is the diocese that says, good data is important enough to me that I'm going to give up some of the advanced tools and wizardry stuff, and I'm going to take my diocese and we're going to use a parish platform, right, at the diocesan level, just so that at least everybody's in the same system, okay? And these companies, of course, will tell you that this is the best solution to do it, right? So we've got PushPay, you've got Gabriel, you've got Ministry Platform, you've got ParishSoft. They will tell you, of course, the diocese can run on our parish system, right? It's going to be great. But just know that there are trade-offs there, okay? Scott Whitaker's a good person to talk to about this. Is anybody else in this? Were you on? Yeah, you were on one, right? Yeah. Okay, so we have another diocese. Lexington's on PushPay. Biloxi, you're on Gabriel. Springfield is on. Springfield's an outlier. Don't talk to Katie. Yeah. Okay, so and what diocese?
Baker.
Okay. So afterwards, if you have questions, intermingle among you, or use the Whova app, right, and reach out and say... You can make a connection in the Whova app. But there's dioceses here that are on that, and they can tell you if it's worth it. We can give our perspective, of course, but that's just the state of affairs. I wish I had better news. I wish I could tell you that all these problems are solved. I can't. Everything I'm telling you is like, I have 70% good news, and this is just what we're dealing with. Okay? Another quick slide. We get asked a lot about gift processing and lockbox providers, so let's talk about that for a minute. Honestly, it's a little bit similar to how people feel about Razor's Edge and their different software. Like, people are okay... They have strong opinions. Basically, here's what it looks like for gift processors. There are four that we do this in a whole bunch of dioceses. We help set up gift processors or we help do the RFPs. There's four that dioceses use on a regular basis. You have LCI, which I think is actually Cathedral. Is that right? Okay. So LCI, we probably recommend them the most. There's Agilis out of Minnesota. There is Deluxe out of, I'm going to say Maine. And there's More RMG. Every one of them has horror stories. And I was, in this room, there are at least 10 people who could tell you absolute horror stories about, I will never use Agilis again. I will never use Deluxe again. What seems to happen is you have a lockbox provider and they do a good job for a couple of years and then they drop the ball on something major, right? And then you jump from Agilis to Letter Concepts or from Letter Concepts to Deluxe. And that's just what it is. It's a game of musical chairs. We end up recommending Letter Concepts more than any because they do a good job of inputting gifts. Right? They're one of the few that's willing to take your in-pew pledge cards and actually do a lookup against a flat file. So if Nick and Holly write in pencil, write on a card, they will look it in, they will type in the data, and they'll actually go back and look up our constituent code from a separate file you give them. That's a huge deal, right? There are also banks that do a pretty good job, right? We use Pinnacle, we use Bank of Oklahoma, we use UMB. Banks, you have to be careful. So if you're one of the four up top, They know what you're doing. They understand how the process works. They understand that they are going to be getting bags of handwritten pledge cards. They understand it. Banks do not, right? They will promise you, we can do all, because they want your money, right? Like, not like they want your money, like, give me your money. They want your account, right? They want your savings, and they want you to have accounts with them. They will, whether intentionally or not, they will pretend that they can do everything. But what they're thinking of when they say they do lockboxing is they're thinking of like a utility bill that looks the exact same for every single person, has a scan line on it, they can just run it through a machine. And then they always say, oh my goodness, I had no idea when you had run an InPew, right? Even though you've talked to them about it, they act shocked. Oh my gosh, that's going to cost more money. We don't type anything in. So you have to be careful with banks. These three get it, and they have a lot of dioceses that understand it. But that's the option. So if you're using a local bank, Just beware when you have to be very clear with them. And then there's sort of a middle ground, AQ2, I think is here. Andy, is that right? Okay. So AQ2 is sort of, look at that as if you don't want to outsource your gift processing to a provider, either a bank or someone else, AQ2 has some technology that lets you do things in-house. If you're curious about that, again, we have no dog in this fight, but they're here. They're a vendor. Andy knows more about this on our team than probably anyone on earth. Okay. That's not true. There is somebody else who's really good at this. Do you guys know Brian? Is Brian here? Brian is a unicorn because he runs one of the greatest appeals in the country, but he also, before that, worked at a lockbox, okay? So he is the guy to talk to. So if you have any questions about this, if you're wondering about your provider, about what you should be getting out of it or how it all works or how best to set it up, talk to Brian. He knows what he's doing, okay? Brian's in St. Louis. Brian and Peter shared a pedicab last night at about 1 o'clock to come back to the hotel, so make sure to ask him about that as well. All right, automation. I'm passionate about all these topics. Automation, you guys hear me talking about this because it is a big deal for your diocese. I'm going to share a couple examples of what dioceses are doing with automation, and then you can run with it from there. So let's start with Dallas, okay? And many of the dioceses in here do this, but I have a slide for Kelly, so I'll highlight Kelly in Dallas. This is the email that Kelly gets every day. Okay. Kelly is the development director there. He gets an email. It's all the gifts above $1,000. Okay. They use Razor's Edge, and he's like, I just need an easy way to look over this because he catches errors or if he knows somebody that's interesting to him. So it started there. He's like, automate an email that just tells me any gift above this level. That would be helpful for me in my job as a development director. And then, like all things, you build on it. So the email notification goes to Kelly, but then he said, okay, based on this, assign actions inside of Razor's Edge to my team, right? If John has this donor in their portfolio, make sure that we're reminding John to send him an email. Or if Asia is the one who owns this donor, prompt her to make a phone call. And you can do that, right? This just happens automatically. It builds on itself. You can then add additional actions. You can add tasks. You can do things inside of Razor's Edge. So if you're a large diocese with relationship managers, your life gets a lot easier, okay? It just naturally happens. As gifts come in, the appropriate steps take place. That's where this all started. And here's where it's gone. And I want to put this up for you. You guys scan this and put in your email and see how much your life is going to change. You're going to get an email. The form looks like this. Put in your name, put in your email, because I want you to take this email back to your diocese and you're going to want to show your data people. Okay. So you can go to easy.automategenius.com. We just spun that up for this conference. You can also scan the code. Enter your email address. While you do that, I'll show you what it's going to look like. Okay. Who knows who that is on the screen there? Is Bill Maloney here? Bill was at Kansas City, Kansas. Okay, so put in your email address, and you'll get an example of what the future looks like. There is an email that you will get immediately that looks like this. It's going to come from me. I did not just send it because I'm here talking to you. This is a magic trick. The email will come to you as if I just sent it to you, and it's going to look like this. And it's going to be fake donors, but for you, it will be very real when you set it up in your diocese. And you'll look what happens. So we have a Leslie Cooper, right, who made a gift above $1,000. Below that, we've got Mary Smith, who's a first-time donor. Okay, so this is helpful. So this is taking the email digest that Kelly has in Dallas and Peter in Oklahoma City and lots of other folks have in place. I know Phoenix has this. It's taking the gift digest, the natural next step. And if you look, there's a little hyperlink next to each of those names. And you'll see this in the email that you receive, which is why important that you have it on your phone to show you the magic of it. You are going to click on that prompt, and what will happen is it will draft an email from you to that donor. From your email address. This is not a do not reply from Blackbaud. This is not a newsletter. This is you or your relationship manager or your assistant development director, whoever's in charge of your donors. Maybe it's somebody different if it's a new donor. Maybe it's somebody different if it's a major donor. Maybe you're in a wonderful diocese where the vicar general or bishop, you know, understands fundraising development, and they want to be the ones to email a donor, you know, above $10,000. This is where the world is going, okay? So imagine waking up every single morning, and you get this little list, and there's a bunch of new donors on there. There might be some libunts on there. Somebody increased their gift, and it prompts you. You don't even have to write the email. It drafts it for you. You can send it if you know them. You can edit it galore. You can delete it if you don't know them, but it's just served up on a platter. It's like you had an assistant that works the night shift in your development office and just watches the gifts come in and combs through razor's edge. And they do things that you would never be able to do on your own that are really meaningful to a donor. For example, let's say a donor just made their 50th gift to your diocese. Many of you have donors who have made 50 gifts and 100 gifts. How incredible would that be for you to be able to notice that gift when it comes in and say, Mrs. Smith, I think this is the 25th time that you've given to the diocese. That's incredible, right? Maybe that's worth a note from the bishop. Maybe it's worth a phone call. None of that can happen right now absent automation, because you're never going to sit there and pull a list every single day and count gifts. You're just not going to do it. And if you do, you're not going to do it and then go and start with a blank sheet of paper and start writing an email. Automation is the future in fundraising, not because it's doing earth-shattering things, because it's doing all the boring things, all the things you wish you were doing every single day. There's nobody in this room that doesn't realize I would be doing my job better if every day I sent 10 emails to donors, just personal, heartfelt, telling them how great they are. All of you know that to be true, but none of you do because you don't have the time, right? And you don't have the time to ask somebody to pull a list. You don't have time to write the email. You don't have time to go through it all. And then track that you sent the email so that you don't do the same thing the next day, right, and break the whole illusion and send two robotic emails in a row. All of this is now possible. We have clients galore that do this. The one everybody was asked, how much is it going to raise? Denver automated a Libunt outreach, just looking who made a gift last year, who then hasn't, you know, made a gift this year. It was a really clever email message that went out. Jen's here. She used to be in Denver. They raised more than $100,000 in 6 months. Trackable, two people that clicked on that link in that email. Just a simple automated outreach, okay? To say nothing of the time it'll save you on gift processing and everything else. All right, so you control. You can decide how many emails you want to send a day, who they come from. If it's a certain level, Peter wants it to come from him. If it's at a lower level, he's going to have his assistant send it. Okay? You're in charge of all of that. This is a really big deal. If you have not gone down this road yet, you need to. We've done a ton of free webinars talking about how you can set this up. You should focus on this, right? So get your database clean with the parishes and start working on automation. You're going to be grateful that you did. It's not just also on the outreach. I focus a ton as a fundraiser on how do I connect with donors? How do I make this a meaningful relationship? How do I delight them? There's even more stuff you can do on the back end, right? If you're a database administrator and you're grinding through Razor's Edge all the time, Cleveland is a wonderful example. Patrick Grace and his team, Ken Maker, is a wonderful database administrator. They had a process where once a month they had to send these reports out. And this is fake data, I can assure you. It's from our sandbox. These aren't real donors. But they had a process where Ken and his buddy Mark every month had to go and pull a ton of data. I think it was for like parish funds or endowments that were holding. It was something, right? They had to report out once a month to all of the fund holders. And it took them 2 days every single month. You had to pull the data, then you had to take the data and chop it up into 120 different spreadsheets so that you could, and then you had to distribute it, email it out or mail it out to 120 different parishes. What you can do now through automation, Stacy on our team, who's brilliant, turned the whole thing into a button. So once a month now, instead of taking 2 days of two very skilled, highly intelligent people, they click a button and it goes and it pulls all the data and it automatically chops it up based on which parish it is. And it takes it a step further and it then emails it to the right person, right? Based on who's inside of the database and who's the contact person. Does that make sense? If you find yourself, if you're thinking, boy, we're doing a lot of data entry at my diocese, or we have somebody named Agnes who's typing stuff in all day. Like, I guarantee you Agnes's job could be used in more productive areas than what she's doing right now, okay? Automation is here. You have probably 50 dioceses that are using automation. Jolinda Moore from Indianapolis, if any of you were on the webinar, she's doing a ton of really forward-thinking stuff in Indianapolis. Talk to Jolinda. It's incredible. All right, Diocesan Communications. I'm hustling because I know you guys all want to get to Corey. Diocesan Communications. The trend that you've heard PSG and others talk about for years now is this trend, okay? Dioceses are centralized. The world has changed For a whole bunch of reasons, most notably just the lack of priests, right? In the last 50 years, we're down 60% in terms of the number of priests we have. Priests are now overseeing clustered parishes or families of parishes. We're asking to do less with more. That is causing the pendulum to swing back to the diocese, where the dioceses are now centralizing and professionalizing what they do to the parishes, what they do for the parishes. The first wave was accounting and finance. But that's diocese saying, every parish, you're on QuickBooks, right? We're not doing this thing anymore. Everybody has their own thing. We're going to own this, or we're going to take over your payroll or whatever it might be. Second wave is fundraising. Third wave is communications. What's going on in the third wave here? Communications. Less than half of dioceses still print a newspaper. Okay? That is a major change. We asked, how often do you print it? 13% said they still print a weekly, right? 50 or more editions. The most that are still printing a newspaper are biweekly or monthly. We asked when you stopped printing newspapers, and within the last 5 years, it was, 50%. More than 50% are in those bottom two. They stopped within the last 5 years. This is not because diocesan newspapers are not a good idea. Diocesan newspapers are a great idea, and you should continue printing your diocesan newspaper as long as you can. Most dioceses are making the decision it is not economically feasible anymore because the economics have changed. Not just for diocesan newspapers, for all newspapers, right? They're shutting down. You can't sell advertising enough to cover the costs. So dioceses are doing what's happening across the country in the secular sector. They're shutting down newspapers. For the ones that are still printing, about 2/3 said they're going to keep doing what they're doing. Only a handful said they're going to stop printing or decline. A third of them are trying to decide what to do. Okay. So this is the landscape at dioceses. One of the reasons is because when Pew Research did their survey to say, how do you want to get your news? 80% said TV or digital. They don't want to read newspapers anymore. It's just that the consumer sentiment is not there. So dioceses are closing the newspapers all over the country, which is hamstringing your communications office of your diocese. You used to have this amazing vehicle where you could put it in the newspaper, it would arrive at every home, and they would read it, right? We're about 15 years removed from that being like the majority of what happens in Catholic households. We do not live in that world anymore. So it's leaving your comms director to say, how can I still reach people? Okay. I'm losing the newspaper. Yes, I have a magazine, which is sort of more feature content because we're not breaking news with our diocesan newspaper anymore. So we shift to a feature type magazine route. But how do I reach people daily? Okay. Parishes already know the answer to this. Parishes know that it's social media. Deacon John on our team has been working with parishes on social media for a very long time. When parishes engage people on social media, good things happen. Giving goes up, right? They see higher engagement. They see more delighted parishioners, more informed parishioners. So the parishes know it's social media where it's at, is where it's at, but they need content, right? What should I post? Diocese says, how do we reach people? We have a ton of content. We don't have any distribution network because nobody follows the diocese, okay? They just don't. I presented this at the Catholic Media Association. I thought some of them got upset, right, because they work hard to build an audience. The best diocese comms office is reaching maybe 7% of Catholics. Average parishioners do not follow the diocese. They just don't. Okay? They follow their parish. So there's a disconnect that was out there. So the diocese has a ton of content. They've got the comms office, they've got stewardship and development, your office, your annual appeal has a ton of content. You've got donor stories, you've got the bishop's office. You have all the content. The parishes have the distribution network. It was only a matter of time until eventually somebody was dumb enough to get into this and build this solution. So that's what we did. So we built a connector so that dioceses can now take content and serve it up to parishes for the parishes to post. Does that make sense? And it has become a big deal. So we started in Boston. Boston was the one to pilot this in Harrisburg. Where's Harrisburg? There, I think, Kim. Yes. Well done. Rachel, I shouldn't give Boston the credit. Rachel is actually the one she's a comms director in Harrisburg. So we started Boston, Lansing, Harrisburg. We said, we'll try it. We spun it up. We said, okay, so we built a little platform where the diocese can take all the content they have. They serve it up to the parishes. The parishes log in. They see all the content from the diocese, and they click on what they like, and it goes out. It worked really well for those three, so we let in some more. Des Moines, Wichita, La Crosse, Denver. Worked well for them, so we let in a bunch more. Charleston, Joliet, Phoenix, Gary. Here's what it looks like from the parish point of view. Parish now logs in. And it's an embarrassment of riches. Agnes at the parish knows she needs to be posting on social media. She doesn't have time. She doesn't have a design background. And suddenly the diocese gives her all sorts of options, just serves it up on a platter for her. She clicks on something that she likes. It's already written. She can edit something if she wants. She can change the link. She chooses where she wants it to go out, and it goes out native from the parish. Okay? They get analytics back at the parish level. This has become a big deal. Dioceses love it because you're helping the parishes. It's one of those rare things you can go to the parishes and they say, hey, this actually helps me, right? So the diocese looks like the hero. And the diocese, selfishly, can now reach 50 to 100 times more people than you can reach on your own. Okay? Nobody follows the diocese. They all follow the parishes. Just serve up the content for the parishes. Parishes love it because it's easy and because it gives them, they know they need to be on social media. They don't have the ability. The diocese can serve it up for them. The most impressive thing about this is that once we train parishes on it, more than 80% of them are posting. Okay? Who here has run diocesan campaigns? How hard is it to get 80% of parishes to do anything? You cannot get 80% of parishes to show up for a free lunch if you tried, right? So this is something they clearly enjoy, something that helps them do their jobs. If you're the diocese that can get over 90%, then I will build this for free for you, and we will roll it out. If you're the diocese that can get 100% of parishes on board, I'll give you every service we have for free. We will, that's a promise. So if you think you're there, come talk to us, right? It's not going to be done. It's like running a 3-minute mile. Okay. So we had those dioceses in. This is the biggest trend we see. So we just brought in St. Petersburg. We brought in Cleveland, Austin, Fort Worth just joined in. Oklahoma City's doing this and even more. Dubuque's in there, Honolulu, Sioux Falls. This will be in every diocese in the next 2 years. Okay. This is me telling you, this is something that's cost effective that works really well. It just plain works. Okay. So when you're thinking about how do we get our word out, this is how you do it. You serve up content to parishes, let them post it. Everybody wins. The next big thing is going to be this area. Okay. So we talked about how we centralize operations at the diocesan level, how you communicate with pastors and parish staff. As part of our survey, we really looked into how are dioceses communicating with parishes and we talked to parishes about it. And what we heard from parishes are this is the lived experience of a parish business manager. Nonstop emails from your development office and from your finance office and from your communications office and from your evangelization office and from the bishop's office. It's just getting barrage, right? We're talking to a parish in Boston. She said, I get 9-10 emails a week, everyone from a different office. Yes, the diocese has like the clergy email that everything's supposed to go into, but nobody reads it. So then everybody just goes around it and they email us directly. You see heads nodding in this room. This is a big area of concern. Okay. They're just getting flooded with requests on and on and on. And they say, let's just read the weekly clergy email. So everybody wants to know, why can't this be easier? Parishes are suffering because they're getting just bombarded. Dioceses are suffering because if you try and follow the rules and get your request into the clergy email, it doesn't do you any good because nobody reads it, right? Because it's full of junk and nobody edits it well. And it's like the pastors give you their fake email address and not the real one that they use, you know, like all of those are the issues. And what we found in the survey, so only 11% of dioceses provide information to parishes in a blog form. I bring that up not because blogs are great, but because if I were designing this, this is what you would do. You would not have a weekly email that goes out with like, here's all the stuff you need to know. You would put it on a website in blog format so that people can go back and look and see, oh, I missed it. They can access it on their own. They can go back to see past issues. What happens now is your vicar general or bishop secretary sends it out. Nobody reads it. And then what happens? They email, say, hey, when is that mass again? Or when's the event? Or what time do I have to show up for XYZ? This is what's happening in more than 90% of dioceses in the country. So only 11% are providing it for a blog. It should be through a blog. This may shock some of you. 4% of dioceses distribute this through hard copy mail. There's somebody whose job it is to like clip things out, like put together a whole packet and mail it to pastors every other week or once a month. This is still happening, right? That is the least convenient method of communicating that I can think of, right? When everything is online and you need to RSVP for things. 19% of dioceses have no process to communicate, no process at all. They don't have a weekly clergy, you know, email blast that goes out. They don't have anything. Even they're not even pretending to have like, oh yeah, we have a website that people can go to. They're just like, we have nothing. This is the next big area. And I don't have something to solve this for you. This is not me telling you we've solved it. I'm telling you probably by next year, this is where I think people are finally waking up to. This is an area that we can do better. As the momentum shifts back to the diocese and the diocese looks at itself as how do we serve parishes better? How do we serve things on a platter to parishes? Social media is the example that's kind of leading the way. This is where it's going, right? You are going to get to a point where you're going to have a shared calendar and parishes can see what other parishes are doing so they can plan their festival, right, on the night. You can look on your annual appeal and see, okay, what's going on at the parish level? When do I want commitment weekend to take place? Okay. Right now, less than a third of dioceses have a shared calendar. So this is the next big thing. Hopefully next year I'm talking to you about some good solutions. But this came out, this is a blinking red light from our survey. This diocese and parishes are being served very poorly in this area. All right, we're going to talk about Corey, and then we're going to talk Q&A. I bring up Corey because this session is about the innovative things we're seeing. Automation, cleaning databases, social media stuff is innovative. The forward-thinking dioceses are jumping into it and having success. Corey had an idea a couple of years ago about this Legacy Sunday program. Did anybody attend Corey's session on Legacy Sunday? All right, so some of you heard this, but I'm going to ask Corey to share a couple words, because if somebody asks me, Nick, what's the cool, exciting stuff going on? What should I be looking at? This is absolutely one of those things. So Corey, walk us through the short version. So this fits in wave two, right? So this is like back to the fundraising side of it. The diocese is playing a larger role that used to happen at the parishes. Corey, what is Legacy Sunday all about for the folks that didn't join?
Thank you.
Yeah, please. You gotta use the mic. Everybody make sure to check out that recording of mumbled voices.
The Charlie Brown talk.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, look at that. Look at
I'm telling you.
Could you do that
this
again?
This is old. This is what old looks like. You should hear the comments from my children. So thank you, Nick. I'm going to try to give it the shortest version of it. And I think one of those things that happened that we looked at from a diocese is, what is the church doing for planned giving? And what can you say that the church is doing for planned giving? And especially in fundraising, one of those things that you really do look at is, it is the most avoided part of fundraising inside of the church. It's complex. It has a lot of issues. But I think one of the things that we look about is that there has to be a solution. And in our world, we know that if we put some time, energy into it, we could all together kind of come up with some solution. So we have to innovate, we have to problem solve, and then we have to implement. And so one of the things that we looked at was to be able to really find out from our side, what is it that we have always done? What is the problem? We've always entered the secular into the whole planned giving conversation, and then just made Catholic words along the way. We've never really leaned into it as a church, what is planned giving. And so in that sense, there's secular options that happen, estate planning, all the things that you do, and then we just kind of baptize those along the way or say certain things. And so what we wanted to do is to really wrestle with the initial part of that conversation is, how do we rethink this? And the rethinking of this for us was really understanding that there's a theological barrier for many of the priests that come into it. And it's this idea that we initially, from as part of salvation history, are created for legacy. So much so that Christ very intentionally planned Jesus to come and leave two things behind, a spiritual and a material impact. So why not keep it very simple in that same way and frame planned giving with the spiritual and material impact, two areas that parishioners can wrestle with. And if that's the case, we know that if Jesus was part of that process in salvation history, to know he left behind the Eucharist, he left behind the church and the Holy Spirit inside each one of us, how do we teach and tell people that they're made for legacy? And if they're made for legacy, and we know that, then we can then jump into this idea that we need to be able to have our priests lean into that and share that. Well, part of the problem is the scalability, the resources being put out to a little steak dinner once in a parish for 28 people and watching 400 people pass by doesn't work. Shaking heads, right? That is how we did it. Or if a parish came to you and said, hey, I'll do something on plan giving, you trip over yourself to send them those things. So how do we try to get past those things? Well, we looked at a digital approach, but it's not enough. The digital approach is great because it gives resources to scale. But what we found is that we need to do a better job doing this as a community. So we wanted to be able to launch a day that is two important pieces about it, that they all do it together. And inside of that Legacy Sunday day, that not only that they do it together, but it's repeatable annually. And so those two secrets are what has helped us to be able to kind of push past this idea that planned giving is this cornered conversation that's not happening in scale in our church. We need to be able to think how Catholics and we are made for legacy, and that framing no longer and faithfully removes us from just asking for homes, because that's what a lot of times planned giving is, and leads into the science behind that 90% of planned giving we know is done through a bequest or a will. So lean into that, make the invitation, get that language into the parishioner's hands, allow the pastor to be able to see how to do that. Yes, there's some heavy lifting. We had some great quips up here about what does it take for parishes, 100% of the parishes to participate. It's not going to happen. But we went immediately overnight from three parishes agreeing once a year to be able to do this, and that was a once a year promise, to the Archbishop getting behind it and annually having a repeatable process in our diocese that's going to launch for Legacy Sunday.
And that's the point I want to highlight. So Corey does a much better job speaking than I do. The innovation that I see was just taking what many of you do for your annual appeal, like a commitment weekend, right? And doing that same function for plan giving, right? And all the parishes are going to go at one time. We're going to have a plan giving Sunday. We're going to have Legacy Sunday. Corey's office is providing materials to them. And what I think you probably found is that pastors who are reluctant to talk about plan giving, suddenly if all of his brother pastors are doing it and everybody across the diocese, like it's a thing, they're just participating in it, they're probably way more likely to actually do it. Is that right?
That's correct.
So that's the Legacy Sunday giving that I think that if you're looking for innovation, what Corey's done in New Orleans, many dioceses, you've already optimized your appeal. Not all of you. I mean, not many of you. So some of you have optimized your appeal. You're going to raise everything you're going to raise for your appeal, right? It's going to grow a little bit each year, but you've reached that point. So it leaves you with, okay, we're going to have to do second asks. We're going to have to do other things. Planned giving is this big area that nobody ever wanted to touch, and Corey grabbed onto and said, we're going to put a model in place, right? He's got the theological background, but the actual process, the logistics of, we're going to pick a weekend. Archbishop's going to get behind it. We're going to arm every pastor with the materials. They're going to stand up. They're going to invite people. And in 3 or 4 years, you're going to see incredible fruits from this, right? Take this back to your diocese. Talk to Corey for any questions about it. But this is something you can go back. Everybody's looking for the next big idea. This is a good one. This is a really good one. Okay? You're planting a tree. It won't immediately raise you a ton of money. Corey, has it raised a ton of money immediately? No? Yeah. Not yet. It will. Future Corey is going to be very grateful for current Corey. All right, what do you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about data? Do you want to talk more about Corey? And talk about, yes, from Honolulu.
Yesterday I was at your event, and they mentioned that there was a weekend of foundation meetings or something, and they did not use legacy. Not use legacy when you're going out for the word legacy.
So your question is, why is Corey terrible at his job? Yes. Yes. Thoughts on that? Corey, any objection to the word legacy?
Should I leave now?
Yeah.
No, so what Russell James was talking about, you're referring to Russell James' language. Russell James' language was, what he was doing is he was doing A-B prompting or testing of language with a...
Oh, there you go. Russell James was doing A-B prompting and understanding what language motivates a donor more than the other. It's not that legacy is the problem. It's more of what is going to motivate a donor to be able to have that conversation. Plan Giving Sunday is not going to fly with our pastors.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So it's the language that is the bridge for the day, the branding, but the actual language or an appeal is what Russell James was kind of dealing with. Again, A-B testing, saying what prompts them a little sooner, faster, better. And those things can be implemented, but we needed to brand it in a day that felt Catholic, felt appropriate, and then felt part of the church.
And I would say, crawl before you walk, right? Like the problem in all of your dioceses. Your challenges are not what language to use. Your challenges are like you got to just get something going first, right? You can worry about tweaking it later and fine tuning it. All right, what else? Yes. The question, I'm going to repeat it for the recording, is how did you get Archbishop on board with Legacy Sunday?
So we all know, if you want to do anything in any diocese, you have to pilot it. And so he came back to us and said, after we presented to the Presbyteral Council, pilot it. I went and picked the hardest pastor. I really did. I picked the hardest pastor to get a yes from, and I went and sat with him, convinced him. He was part of the pilot along with three parishes, small parish, inner city parish, suburb parish. We did the pilot, we went through it, presented the results, and then they voted yes for across the diocese. That's the short of it, but yes.
Yep. That's the way to do it. And you can start small. Just pick what? Pick four or five in your diocese. Get them on board. You don't have to pick the hardest ones to work with. Corey is tougher than us. Pick the five easiest ones to work with. Get it up and running. And then just prove it out. But there's magic in the ideas are great, right? And the materials are great and the language is great. There's magic in everybody's going to do this together at one time. That is the secret sauce, I think, to why this is going to be working so well. Okay. Yes. Change management is hard. What it's going to have to come down to is the person that those pastors are emailing right now to ask questions has to tell them it's all in the same spot. And he or she will have to do that for a couple months until eventually they'll go to that spot. So you get up a dedicated web page. You have your weekly updates. You put it out there. You make sure it's useful. You make sure it's punchy. I mean, if you're putting out junk and you're just copy and pasting thousands of words that people don't need, then I don't blame the pastors for not reading it. But if you make sure you care about it, you make sure it's good, you make sure it's punchy, it's in a digestible format, everything is hyperlinked, you're serving it up on a platter for them. If you want them to do something like post something, you're giving it to them in a format that they can post and they can click on it and it'll work. And then just have it, right? Change management's hard, whether it's at a for-profit company or anything. It takes a little while, but you got to be dedicated to it and it'll probably take 3 months and then you'll be off and running. What is in place in diocese right now is not working. It's just what you're doing. Okay? It is the only reason you're doing it is because it's what you did last year. It is not working right now, so it's time to serve your parishes better, especially when you're in those dioceses in the Rust Belt, the Midwest, the Northeast, where you're clustering and merging, and you're asking these pastors to be in charge of a whole bunch of different sites. You've got to start treating them better and being more efficient with their time. We'll start in the back, and we'll go with Debbie. In a good way, exploding.
Yes, right. We have great content. We're not the most awesome at packaging that content. So in that solution, the diocese still have to get their ducks in a row to take the good content and make it presentable.
Yep.
Does it fail there if you don't have that taken care of?
The question is, if the diocese has content and they want to serve it up to parishes to let them post, does the diocese have to get their house in order? Rachel would be the one to talk to. I'd say there's two things we see. There's dioceses that are very centralized. We're like, and I think Rachel is like this, right, in Harrisburg, where everything flows through the comms office. So all, like the different apostolates, they all have content. It goes through her. She blesses it. She packages it, makes it nice, and she serves it up and schedules it. Half the dioceses are the Wild West, and it seems to work as well, where it's a free-for-all in the different departments. All you're in charge, put stuff up. They can look and see what other offices have up, and they don't go through a central, and it seems to work. So a lot of it has to do with the culture of your diocese. But yes, I mean, you want to have good content. I've yet to see a diocese that doesn't already have enough stuff that parishes would gladly post. They just never had the chance to distribute it to parishes. Okay. And Rachel, do you mind hanging out and talking to people that have questions about this? She really does a wonderful job. And one of those rare comms people that comes to ICSC, right? So we appreciate that. Yes, Debbie. Yes, Kim. Yeah, all credit goes to Kim sitting next to her who makes her come to ICSC. Yes, Debbie. Oh, so for like CS, the Catholic social media thing? So the world is converging. That's why I say that we don't have a solution for this yet. So I'm not here pitching a solution. But you have lots of dioceses use Flocknote, and that is turned into sort of a asset library that's there. eCatholic has many of your websites, and they have a content library. We've ended up in this space too, because as soon as we solved the social media side of it, diocese said, okay, well, now we need we've got social media solved. Now we need what's the toolbox that when parish needs to go download a poster or an in-pew pledge card or something like that. So we ended up getting forced into building this as well. In dioceses that have Catholic social media, like I'm thinking of Gary and probably Harrisburg and some others, many of them that are moving to a blog format and serving up content to the pastors like news and notes are linking to, you can find this in the Catholic social media app, right? Click here and it'll immediately pop up and you can post it with a click. That's what I'm talking about, making it easier on parishes. The old way that many of you are doing is telling pastors and business managers, go to the Dropbox and download XYZ, save it to your desktop, and then remember to make sure you post it on a certain day. And it's just not working, right? And you know it's not working, but it's what you've always done. So you keep doing it over and over again because you have a lot of challenges and this is one more thing to take on. By next year, this will be solved in a much more elegant way for you, I guarantee. If not by us, by any of the other folks that I mentioned. Questions? More? automation. You guys should be talking more about automation. No questions because you're already convinced that it's where you're going? Yes.
It's more futuristic, but I'm thinking, are we looking at as a church, with shadow banning and everything else, and certain social trends that are happening that are against Catholic moral teaching?
Yep.
And we're posting things now on social media, and we shadow ban. Are we going to have our own?
Your own? No. I think that so the question is, shadow banning and like with social media sites, as the Catholic end of developing its own, I do not think that's a solution. I think that we need to be in and of the world. I think that St. Paul went to Athens, right, into the city center, which was full of prostitutes and unseemly people, and he preached the word there. I think that's the analogy to what we're doing on social media, right? Think of it as blessing the timelines of your parishioners. I think it's worth our effort to fight for them, right? If they're going to be sitting and scrolling through a feed, I think it's good if they see their church in there, right? I can't control what they see above it and below it, but I think it's a great thing when they're getting reminded and they're getting called back to their parish or the diocese. I think that's a wonderful thing. And just from a practical standpoint, I went to Creighton University. Creighton, hilariously, like 7 years ago, they were going to build this alumni networking thing, right? And they called it J to J, and they rolled it out with big fanfare, and everybody's getting emails, come join the Creighton, you know, alumni network. And it was doomed from the start because that network already exists, right? It's called LinkedIn. And it's everybody that you've ever met is on there. So they're just the use case of like, why would people like, they had to reinvent LinkedIn for one university with, but like it was just that it would be the same, doomed path if the Catholic Church went down that, in my opinion. Deacon John. Ah, yeah. What Deacon John said is your Catholic conference will pay for the fee. But you have to go where people are. I mean, that's our role, right? We don't get to choose what they pay attention to, but we can choose whether or not we're going to play a role in it. What else?
I have more curiosity question. But this Legacy Sunday being rolled out at the same time while New Orleans is going through a bankruptcy, a lot of publicity and negative. How did that impact?
Corey knew your question was coming because he ate. Corey Howitt, ladies and gentlemen, noped on out of here, right, when he saw that question was coming. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I can guess, but it's just, I mean, the world sadly, many of you know exactly what it's like to go through bankruptcy, right? And what is you keep rolling, right? You operate. It doesn't mean you stop fundraising. It doesn't mean you stop telling the story. I think, yeah. Go ahead, Scott. That's who they came through? So from a logistical functional standpoint, it came out of the Catholic Foundation of New Orleans versus the Catholic Diocese itself. Yep. Yep. Okay. So all right. Other questions? Yes, Matt.
Just on the data centralization, you guys have helped a couple of dioceses. Are you aware of some other dioceses that have done on their own?
The data cleanup? So we've done that brutal process of, okay, we've got to clean up our database, and then we're going to go and get the parish rosters and match up those, and we're going to bring constituent codes from one to the other. We've done it for Nashville, Lansing. We're about to do it for Greensburg. I'm sure there's other dioceses that have done it on their own. It's just a bear, right? Don't undersell it. Like, just own it. Be like, this is going to stink. We're all going to hate it, but the benefits of it are legion, right? It's important that we do this because everything that you're doing from communications, fundraising, after that relies on you having good data. We have to stop accepting that we're going to run annual appeals and never have any idea when new parishioners move into your parishes, right? You guys are running annual appeals with your hands tied behind your back. People are moving into your parishes. You have zero idea who they are. You're not reaching them. You're not connecting with them. That only changes when you get your things synced up. Brian. Yep. Have them attend our webinars. I mean, the people that know more about this than anyone on the planet is Stacy Cope in our office and Austin Brown and Angie from our team, for Razor's Edge specifically. The limit for us is on the APIs through Razor's Edge. We have yet to have a diocese, so whether it's Archdiocese of Los Angeles or Denver or anybody big, we have yet to have a situation where they want to do something and we can't do it, absent it, the API not being available through, like, the pledge API may not be available yet. You want to send up some automation to thank people and they pay off a pledge. If you can't get the data, you can't do it. If you can get the data, you can do anything. And the hard part is not setting up the automation. The hard part is putting a guardrail around the automation so that if you say, I want to email new donors with a really heartfelt personal message from me anytime it's a new donor. The hard part is doing that and then setting up a trigger so that you know you did it, so that the next day you don't send their spouse the exact same email, right? It's putting up the guardrails to tag in the attributes or something else to make sure that you're not building automations that are going to run and spin out of control. All right, lots of people are doing what I did in school, like you jingle your bag to let the teacher know that it's like the end of the schedule. So we're still around for a little while. If you have questions, come see us downstairs. I appreciate all of you. Thank you so much. Anything for the...
Yes. Thank you so much, Nick. Remember to please fill out the survey on the Whova app. And this was session 56, so please fill out the survey. Thanks y'all so much. See you at lunch in just a little bit.